Welcome to Mentioned in Dispatches, the podcast from the Western Front Association, with me, Dr. Tom Thorpe. The WFA is the UK's largest Great War History Society. We have around 6,000 members worldwide and are dedicated to furthering understanding of the Great War. For more information, visit our website at westernfrontassociation.com. It is the 19th of June 2025, and this is episode 361. On this week's programme, Tim Halstead discusses the London Territorial Force and London schools during the Great War. This talk was delivered as part of the London Pride Conference in June 2024, which focused on London's Territorial Force from 1908 to 1921.
Okay, well, thanks very much. I hope this session will turn out to be more George Frederick than Irene. But anyway, my focus in this very brief talk is going to be about the schools and the London Territorials in 1914 and 1915. In other words, while there was free will about where you went. There's some useful Board of Education figures that kindly Charles gave me from 1910. And then there were 139 secondary schools within the County of London. So that excludes certain parts of Greater London that we might expect to see, like Ealing and Tottenham, Acton, places like that, and where we know there were a lot of secondary schools. Of those 139, 44 were boys' schools, 78 were girls, and only 17 were co-ed. Of those 44 boys' schools, 8 were public schools. In other words, they were for the children of the upper classes and the upper middle classes, and most of the boys would go into the professions or business. Whereas for the remaining schools, the 36, I would call those what we would call tier two schools, and basically served the families of the lower middle classes. Many of them went on to be clerks in the city. So let's have a quick look at the school. Oops, no, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm only going to look at 4 out of those 44 in the interests of time. So you've got Westminster in the top left-hand corner. The top right-hand corner is St Dunstan's in Catford. On the bottom left is Elaine's in Dulwich. And on the bottom right is St Paul's in Hammersmith. St Dunstan's and Elaine's were tier two schools at the time. And bear in mind that a lot of these schools now, which were originally tier two schools, serve a far smaller social grouping than they did then. So when war broke out, one of the things that you find commonly in all the school magazines you read is a long list of those who are serving with the armed forces, not just the London regiments, but the whole lot. And also, in other ways, demonstrating how they were supporting the war efforts. So Elaine's talks about formation of a VTC attached to the school, as well as the support they're going to give to the families of those who've gone off to serve. But the important thing to remember here is that London was a complicated and sophisticated place in 1914. You may have heard other speakers talk about this. So you cannot talk about all the schools as being the same. There are factors which make each contribution unique. And of course, in August and September 1914, you've also got the factor of the sheer chaos of the mobilisation, that decision to form the new armies, and you've got the people forming outside the recruiting offices. So in terms of what I want to talk about, there are three themes here. The idea of club membership, the idea of connections, and the idea of networks. At its highest level, many boys from the schools enlisted or were already enlisted were enlisted with places close to work. It's a very common theme, this of men joining a London territorial unit in the centre of London, doing their drill and after work and then going home. And inevitably, you also find that all their mates, unsurprisingly, join them in those battalions if they possibly can. So you've got those connections coming through. At Alain's, for example, in November 1941, 41% of all their old boys who were serving with the Londons, and not all were, it was probably about only 40% of them were serving with the Londons and the others had gone elsewhere. Haven't got time to touch on that this afternoon. And they were concentrated on four different battalions, the London Rifle Brigade, the London Scottish, the Queen's and the Queen's Westminster, but also in addition, their local territorial unit, which is the 20th London at Blackheath. Just thinking about this from a chaos point of view, if you look at the stories of recruitment of the Artists and the London Rifle Brigade 2nd Battalions, in the case of the Artists, what they did was they went through the local telephone directory and they looked for anyone who thought might be suitable to be a member of their battalion. Popped invitations through all the doors, and then rather than their surprise the following morning, were overwhelmed by people who wished to join. And what they had to do was get the non-commissioned officers to change into civvies, go round and look at who they thought were likely men and give them an invitation card and say, come back tomorrow, will you? And in the case of the London Rifle Brigade, they had a similar problem. So the guy in charge of recruitment said, all right, anyone who's a rower, fall out and go on to the other side. And when that wasn't enough, he said, right, anyone who's a rugby player, fall out and go to the other side of the road. By that, he got enough men for his 2nd Battalion recruitment for that day, so he sent the rest home. But what it does is it does demonstrate that there's a sort of certain level of chaos about it, and that there are other connections. So St Paul's, which is a day public school, is very well known for its rowing. But if you look at its figures in November 1914, there's actually no one in the London Rifle Brigade. So there are other connections going on. People who know of the London Rifle Brigade and think it's a likely place to be enlisting with, and they're going there. Whereas in the case of St Paul's, they're far more likely to find themselves in the Artists, which is presumably because the Artists have been looking through the telephone directory and spotted these chaps as being likely candidates to be officers. And this concept of clubs cuts in another way. What you will find is, for example, 20th London might not have been so attractive because it was based in Blackheath, and if you're working in London, then why come home and go there when you could stay in London and you've got all your friends, you've got your boxing and your other sporting activity to keep you going? Well, St Dunstan's actually formed a company, the G Company, with the 20th at the invitation of Lieutenant Colonel Moore, who was a commanding officer of the 20th. And when we look at the first editions of the school magazine, you find that 75% of them are actually serving with this company. Given that the collation of information in the school magazines is going to be just as chaotic as anything else, it's quite interesting. But even by the end of 1915, I think there are probably at least 20% serving with the 20th from St Dunstan's alone. And if you compare it to other schools, local schools, like Elaine's or even Cove's, you have not got such a high percentage. So that club idea works in lots of different ways. And what you also get is that because of those connections, you find that different schools will have different levels of participation. Westminster, predominantly a boarding school, only has about 22% of its old boys in the London regiments. And the reasons are obvious. They're well connected. They come from more privileged backgrounds, and they can... they're probably going home and they're getting their commissions through their connections there. Bear in mind, up to December 1914, it's the battalion commanding officer who's responsible for recruiting his battalion and his officers. It's only in early 1915 that the War Office actually feels under enough control to be able to take that back. And then, as we said about St Paul's, you've got about 60% of their boys being in a London regiment, and that is because obviously they're day boys and they've got the connections there. And class is very important in all this. So look at St Paul's and Westminster, and both have a very high percentage of London men in socially elite battalions inside and outside the London units, the London territorials. So that includes the public school battalions, for example, the stockbrokers battalion, or units like that, not formally part of the London territorials, but drawing on them. So you will see in the case of St Paul's, the Honourable Artillery Company, the Inns of Court, the London Scottish and the Artists. And again, with Westminster, you see the same suspects popping up with the addition of Queen's Westminster. The clue's in the name there, but So, but then you look at somewhere like Elaine's, and hardly anyone there is in the Artists. But going along outside this is this idea of networks, and you particularly see this in the Inns of Court. OTC. I did a bit of a detailed study of Elaine's, which for those fascinated enough will be able to see it in the chapter I'm putting together. But the Inns of Court had a network of people around the country and throughout the world. So you see this coming through, that they are able to plug into this network and find these men. So there's a man called Ernest Gott, who was educated at Elaine's. He was known to the mayor of Nuneaton. He had connections with University of London, and he was able to plug into that network and do his training with the Inns of Court OTC. Likewise, a man called Henry Steedman Lewis. He comes back from Brazil, and he's obviously fixed it all up before he comes back through the Inns of Court, and he ends up with the Inns of Court, and subsequently then goes on to the Royal Sussex. So these guys are using the London Regiment as a way of getting themselves into a commission. So, in conclusion, we spoke about clubs, that idea of your membership of the company you work for, and those links to particular territorial battalions in the city, and in the odd case with your local battalion, and not just based purely on the fact that you live locally, but the unit's making a conscientious effort to make sure that you are incentivized to join it. So in the case of Old Dunstonians, you know, just saying, come on, boys, let's all serve together. And we'll also give you a commanding officer who's a commanding officer of your OTC, so you know them all. And then we had that idea of connections with London units, those social connections with their somewhat ramshackle beginning, as is with the Artists and the LRB. And that idea that St Paul's and Westminster have a far better in to certain battalions like the Artists and the and the London Rifle Brigade and the Honourable Artillery Company. And finally, we talked about networks. So that idea of organisations like the Inns of Court, OTC, actively going out to find people who might be suitable for them and recruit them and get them all on board. So the initial stages were no doubt chaotic. We've got limited information from the school magazines, which is why I've taken a whole range of samples to try and draw out some firmer conclusions rather than based on school. But there's no doubt about it that there are clear themes coming through despite that chaos, and the chaos is probably messing it up a bit. But in the end, it turns out that the other things like networks, clubs and connections overwhelm that. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Mentioned in Dispatches podcast from the Western Front Association with me, Tom Thorpe. Thank you for all my guests for appearing on this edition. The theme music for this podcast was George Butterworth's The Banks of Green Willow. It was performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Krish Russman, and produced by Biz Records. This recording is part of a collection of orchestral works by Butterworth performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and supported by the Western Front Association. This is available from all good record stores under the record code BIS 2195. Until next time.